Exodus chapter 26. And we're going to look at this chapter. This is one of those chapters that if you're one of those individuals who faithfully reads the Word of God through once a year or every 6 months or whatever, then it's kind of like reading through Numbers or Leviticus. You know, and you're like, you read it and, well, whatever that was about, I got my reading in for today. I suspect there's actually quite a few passages like that in the Bible. You read them once a year if you're a faithful Bible reader, or once in your life, and you don't have a clue what that was, so you just move on. So we'll take a little bit of time tonight to go through some detailed construction plans and some embroidery work. So if you're interested in those things, if you're an architect, if you're in construction, if you sew things, there are things here that touch on the everyday life. So that the Bible's a real book. It touches every area of life. And that's what makes it so wonderful and so rich. So tonight we're going to look at the tabernacle and its coverings. It really took me a long time to work through this text because it's just, you have presuppositions a lot of time when you come to the text. You assume something, you don't even realize you're assuming it until 2 hours later and you're like, oh, now it all makes sense. If I just turn this way, now it makes sense. So let's look at Exodus chapter 26, verses 1 through 6, where we're going to look at the tabernacle curtains, which were made of linen. Hopefully you'll learn some new things about the tabernacle. I sure did. Now, verses 1 through 6 are going to describe the innermost curtains, which are the most beautiful, and they could only be seen on the ceiling. So if they were on this room, for example, you wouldn't see them hanging down the walls. You'd only see it as the ceiling of this room. These curtains were then overlaid with other curtains on top of them, and these would, of course, protect the furniture inside. Inside the tabernacle was a world within the world, a microcosm of the macrocosm, okay? And God's residence within in the presence of His people. Okay? So let's read verses 1 through 6. Moreover, in other words, I've already told you some things that you should make, namely the things in chapter 25, the Ark of the Covenant, the golden lampstand, and the table of the showbread. Okay, and we've already looked at those articles, those furnishings within the tabernacle. Now we're going to look at the curtains. Moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twisted linen and blue and purple and scarlet material. You shall make them with cherubim. We often say cherubim. It's actually cherubim. The work of a skillful workman. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits, 42 feet, okay? And the width of each curtain, 4 cubits, 6 feet. All the curtains shall have the same measurements. 5 curtains shall be joined to one another, and the other 5 curtains shall be joined to one another. You shall make loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain in the first set, and likewise you shall make them on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the second set. You shall make 50 loops in the one curtain, and you shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that's in the second set. The loops shall be opposite each other. You shall make 50 clasps of gold and join the curtains to one another with the clasps so that the tabernacle will be a unit. Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit. The tabernacle here is the word miskan. It refers to a temporary dwelling place because the Israelites were going to be moving about, and whenever they took camp and they'd have to take the tabernacle down and move it somewhere else. So the tabernacle was a temporary dwelling place for God. or the presence, the manifestation of God, the Shekinah glory. In these verses it says that 10 curtains were to be made. And the material was linen, which is the finest material. And it was linen of 3 colors. The text says blue, purple, and scarlet. But as I told you earlier in chapter 25, the blue is actually more of a violet. And the purple is more of a reddish purple. So these are different, two shades of purple. And of course scarlet, which is a deep crimson red. These were all very rich, very expensive colors. I don't know if you remember the Proverbs 31 lady, she made garments for herself of scarlet. Well, this is not some kind of shabby thing that she made for herself. This was excellent clothing. Okay, she wasn't a poor dresser. She was excellent. She made things beautiful with her hands. And the 3 colors of linen were then to be twisted together. That's the way the text talks about it. They would have to twist the linen together so that it was a picture of a cherubim on it. This is not easy to do. This is the work of an artist. The text says it's the work of a skillful workman. Okay, the work of a skillful workman. But the original Hebrew has the thought of the work of a thinker. The work of a thinker. That is, it requires the creative imagination of an artist. One who thinks about what he's got to create, the materials that he has, and how he's going to put them together to make it portray cherubim. So the thoughtful artist would have to ask, how can I twist multiple dyed linens together so that it pictures cherubim? What should the cherubim look like? What does the face of a cherub look like? What does the form of a cherub look like? And how can I twist 3 linens into such a person? Or angel, but they are personalities. The artist would have to spend some time with Moses, okay, as we find out, in order to learn the answers to many of these questions, since Moses, when he was on Mount Sinai, when he peered into heaven, saw cherubim around the throne of God. Josephus mentions that. So, why cherubim? Well, why would cherubim, in other words, be on these curtains that were on the ceiling? Well, cherubim guard the holiness of God. Okay, that is one of their functions. That's the way we see them in Scripture, close to the throne, guarding His holiness. In the early book of Genesis, the first time we see the cherubim is when they are guarding the way to the Garden of Eden, or to the Tree of Life. They guard the holiness of God. On the Ark of the Covenant, you had 2 cherubs. And 2 Samuel 6:2 says, God is enthroned above the cherubim. Now, we have some descriptions of cherubim in the Old Testament. For example, in Ezekiel chapter 10, verse 16, it says that they have wings. And they appear to have the hands of a man underneath the wings. Also, they have something like wheels underneath them to move. This will challenge your creative imagination. They also have 2 faces, one of a man and the other of a lion. Ezekiel 41, 18 through 19. That's over in the Millennial Temple, but it speaks of the cherubs there. So these were to be twisted together from the linen, 3 colors, to make these cherubim on the ceilings of the curtain. Each highly artistic curtain was the same size, 42 feet in length and 6 feet in width. Now let me show you this picture that I put together to try to illustrate what we have here. Okay, number one, you see this gray box in the inside and these little golden pieces of furniture inside? This is the size of the tabernacle itself. In relation to the curtains, this curtain which would hang around it, over it, and or down the sides. Okay? And when it says that they are 42 feet wide, or long, I should say. When I started trying to put this thing together, I tried to lay them this way. That's probably most everybody's idea when they read it, because you think, well, we know the tabernacle's longer this way, and one side's longer, so that must run this way. No. That got me stumped for like 45 minutes or maybe even a couple of hours. It's like, how does this thing work? Okay. And I've tried to even put the colors here, the red and the purple, the crimson and the purple mixed together. So they take five of these. Each one is 6 feet wide and 42 feet long. They'd sew them together. One, two, three, four, five. Sewed together. Okay? And then on the edge, they put 50 little pieces of or loops there. Okay? Made of the same fabric. And then the other side, they did the same thing. One, two, three, four, five. And they sewed all those together so you have two big pieces when you get all said and done, right? And, of course, they put 50 loops on this side. And then they got 50 clasps of gold. And those went across the middle to link them together. So it would be one big curtain when they got done. They didn't just have them sew all 10 together because you wouldn't be able to carry that thing. Okay, so they made two of them after they sewed them all together. Okay, so that's kind of what it looks like. Now, when this thing was laid over the tabernacle, okay, of course these sides hung down on the outside, like it'd be like hanging on the outside of our building. And at the sides they were, they came to within 1.5 or 1.5 feet of the ground on either side. Okay, so they didn't completely cover the boards all the way to the ground. Okay, they just went and 1.5 feet was left on the outside. Now let's look at the next two sets of curtains. Oh, well, I should say, when they hung down, they had pegs, which they didn't go out. They hung straight down against the walls and attached to the walls. So they didn't flap around or anything like that. They were against the walls. Okay? Now those were made of linen. The next set of curtains is made of goat's hair. And this is found in verses 7 through 14. These are the curtains of the tent. Okay? This is not a part of the tabernacle proper. The tabernacle proper is only those innermost curtains and everything within. Everything out of that is not the tabernacle proper. It's called the tent. Okay? So we're done basically with the tabernacle. These are to protect the tabernacle and to protect the beautiful linen curtains. And these are made of goat's hair. The tent is the ohel, and its curtains covered and protected the tabernacle proper. Now, each curtain was made of this black goat's hair. And the Song of Solomon, Solomon likens his bride's hair to a flock of goats. And I know everybody's just, oh, it's such a compliment, Solomon. You're so good with words. Oh, you got me all riled up, Solomon. Well, that was actually a compliment because it was a very deep black and very silky and full. So that's what he was saying about her hair. It was a beautiful black, silky and full. You know, you can find that on just about any bottle of shampoo that you buy. It's not the black part, but it'll make your hair silky and full. And that's what he was saying. So these curtains were made a lot like the ones before, but they're just a little bit larger. So let's read verses 7 through 14. Then you shall make curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. See there, it's not a part of the tabernacle proper. It's over it. You shall make 11 curtains in all, not 10, but 11. The length of each curtain shall be 30 cubits, or 45 feet. Okay, 45 feet, which is 3 feet longer than the others, which were 42 feet. That's going to make up for that foot and a half on either side that didn't touch the ground. Okay? And the width of each curtain is 4 cubits, or 6 feet. Same as the other curtains. The 11 curtains shall have the same measurements. Now you shall join 5 curtains by themselves, that is, sew them together, and the other 6 curtains by themselves. Okay, so you have one that's bigger than the other, a little bit bigger. And you shall double over the 6th curtain at the front of the tent. And that's where everybody gets lost. So we'll explain that a little bit. Okay? You shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the first set, 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the second set. So it's the same as the other curtain. You shall make 50 clasps of bronze this time. Not gold, bronze. Remember, the farther you get away from God, the lesser precious metal is used. And you shall put the clasps into the loops and join the tent together so that it will be a unit. The overlapping part that is left over in the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that's left over, shall lap over the back of the tabernacle. So it hung over the back. The cubit on one side and the cubit on the other side. Okay, that's a cubit's about a foot and a half. That's the part on the side at the bottom. Okay. Of what is left over in the length of the curtains of the tent shall lap over the sides of the tabernacle on one side and on the other to cover it. Then in the last verse he mentions two other covers. You shall make a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red and a covering of porpoise skins above. I should have put this up there while we're doing that. Okay. So these are black like goats. They're made of goat's hair. And on one side you've got five sewed together. Again, you can see the tabernacle here. And this is 45 feet this time instead of 42. And it's a little bit longer too, because up here you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a sixth. But remember, it said this sixth one folded over. So you only see half of it here. Do you understand? Now this is the front, the east. Every time I put the directions up here, because every time they would move the tabernacle and put it somewhere else, it always sat in the same orientation. They didn't just say, oh, well, what's the best way to put it up at our campground here? Oh, right here. No. They always set it in the same orientation. So the Mediterranean Sea would have been right over that way. The Negev would have been that way. Lebanon would have been that way. And over there would be, and now there we go. Okay, so it was always like that. So right at the front, at the entryway, which was the east side, because the Holy of Holies is back here. This is where the Ark of the Covenant is resting. And right in front of the altar of incense, over here we have the table of showbread, and over here the menorah. And so right in the front, this curtain would fold over and around the linen curtain underneath it. So, glad somebody gave me this tonight. I can use it now. So, let's say that this is that last curtain on the edge, and it comes up to the front of the tent, and this comes underneath. And in between there, you have that beautiful linen curtain. It's protecting it from the elements out here. Like that.
Like a sandwich.
Yeah, like a sandwich. Just wrapped around it and underneath it to protect the edge of that linen curtain. So, of course, it's a little different in size. Whereas before, we have 30 feet here and 30 feet here. When you come down to the next one, 30 up here, that's the same, but down here you got 33. It would be 36, except you tucked 3 feet underneath to protect that linen curtain, which is just underneath this.
Is that so you can offset the rings?
And that also offsets the rings. Excellent observation. Wonderful. Good thinking. So that also offsets these rings, because here you have bronze rings. If you walked inside and you looked up at the ceiling, you wouldn't see them. You would only see the gold rings in a black background, because they're just offset just enough to hide them. Okay? And so this is producing a microcosm within a small world within the world. And so the outside, the excess over here would hang over in the front and the back, or on the sides and the back, and would reach all the way to the ground, and then would be pegged into the baseboards there. Okay, finally, verse 14 mentions two more covers. Now, these are not curtains like the previous two, but they are covers. I'll leave this here for a minute. You shall make a covering for the tent of ram skins. So now this is a covering for the tent itself, whereas the goat skins was a covering for the tabernacle itself. And this one is made of ram skin dyed red. Even today, the Bedouins spread over their tents a cover like this, and it's made of something dyed red. The size of the cover is not mentioned here, okay? But rabbinic tradition says it was 15 feet wide and 45 feet long. That means it would be the exact size of the tabernacle itself. So it would sit directly on top of that. It wouldn't hang over the sides at all. And then still another cover is mentioned, a covering of porpoise skins above. Some translations say it's badger skins or something like that. That's probably not right. Probably this is either a porpoise, which is found in the eastern Mediterranean, or it's a dugong. The dugongs are found in the Red Sea. So those are both accessible from by traders and things like that in that day. Now, some people say this wasn't really a cover that sat on top, but this was the bags that they carried the things in. I don't really know. Numbers 4:6 talks about when they pack up the tabernacle, they put them in bags of porpoise skin. So it's possible that the top one was this red thing, and then the porpoise skins were actually used as bags to carry a lot of the temple articles and furnishings and the utensils and all that. Or maybe it served both purposes. I don't know. Okay? But if you want to know more about that, you read Numbers chapter 4, verses 6 and following. So in the end, this is what you would see. If you walked into the sanctuary, you'd see, of course, the golden furnishings in there. The walls, as we're going to find out in a minute, are golden. Okay? A ceiling of intricately woven linen cherubim in violet purple, red purple, and scarlet. Anyone inside the tabernacle looking upward would see the cherubim, which symbolizes the celestial throne of God. And he would also see the gold clasps going across against the black background. In which, too, there was an allusion to the heavens in these gold clasps. As the sages of the Talmud already realized, and the clasps appeared in the tabernacle like stars in the sky. Okay, that's the way it looked from within. So by way of decor, the sanctuary was like a microcosm, a small universe within the universe that you and I know. And God was there in the midst of his people. Okay, that's fairly clear. I've done the best I can to kind of communicate what it was like. These are difficult plans. Okay, the boards are mentioned in verses 15 through 30. The boards are what composed the wall of the tabernacle. It was not just a big solid thing, okay, but it was more like a fence. More like, that's what you want to envision. Someone who's built a privacy fence, okay? You know what that looks like. Well, that's how these boards stand. They stand up end to end and crammed right up next to one another all along the walls, okay? But they're not made of cedar or something like that, okay? Verse 15, then you shall make the boards for the tabernacle of acacia wood standing upright. So just like a picket on a fence. 10 cubits shall be the length of each board. Okay, that's 15 feet. It was 15 feet tall. How tall is this ceiling? Isn't it close to 15 feet? Right here in the middle? 13, 14? That line's 8 foot? Oh, well, look right back there. It's about close to 15 foot, yeah. So that's about how tall each one would be, okay? So it's going to be a pretty big board, okay? That's how tall the boards were. Then it goes on to say, and 1.5 cubits the width of each board. Okay, that's 2 feet and 3 inches. 2 feet and 3 inches wide and 15 feet tall. And notice it doesn't mention the thickness, but we'll talk about that in a minute. There shall be 2 tenons for each board, fitted to one another. These are right down to the bottom. Thus you shall do for all the boards of the tabernacle. I'll have to show you a picture of that. You shall make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side. You shall make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under one board for its 2 tenons, and 2 sockets under another board for its 2 tenons. And for the second side of the tabernacle, on the north side, 20 boards. So the north and south are the same, 20 boards. 40 sockets, and they're 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under one board, 2 sockets under another board. For the rear of the tabernacle to the west, that is, the Holy of Holies, you shall make 6 boards. You shall make 2 boards for the corners, in addition, of course, of the tabernacle at the rear. They shall be double beneath. Well, what's that mean? We'll have to find that out. And together they shall be complete to its top to the first ring. Thus it shall be with both of them, that is, both corners. They shall form the 2 corners. There shall be 8 boards with their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one board, 2 sockets under another board. Then you get really tired of reading, right? Then you shall make bars of acacia wood, 5 for the boards of one side of the tabernacle. These are like, what do they call those? Stretchers on the back of a privacy fence. You seen those going across there? Okay, this is the stretchers, okay? Now you know what I'm talking about. You shall make bars of acacia wood, stretchers of acacia wood, 5 for the boards of one side of the tabernacle, 5 boards for the side of the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 boards for the bars for the boards of the side of the tabernacle for the rear side to the west. The middle bar in the center of the boards, that's the middle stretcher, shall pass through from end to end. That means one of them's got to be 45 feet long. You shall overlay the boards with gold and make their rings of gold as holders for the bars. So, you know, we put those little clamps on there, you know, you get them at Ditmar or whatever, and I don't know how much they cost. 50 cents? Well, these are made of gold. Okay. Yeah, everyone's made of gold. Then you shall erect the tabernacle according to its plan which you've been shown on the mountain. In other words, from the last verse, we know that we don't have every detail here. If we had to construct it just from what we had here, it'd be difficult. We like, okay, we need Moses to come over here and kind of direct us in certain respects to help us out. So we're going to do the best we can to reconstruct what Moses saw from what we have. So in the first 3 verses, 15 through 17, the construction of each board is described. Each board was made of acacia wood, just like the Ark of the Covenant, just like the table of the showbread, and just like the incense altar. Each board was 15 feet tall and 2 feet 3 inches wide. The thickness is not mentioned. The Talmud assumes that they were the same thickness, 2 feet 3 inches, so that it was a big cube. But let me tell you, something that big would be extremely heavy. Extremely heavy. And the sockets at the base, these 2 silver sockets, only weigh 75 pounds a piece. I'm willing to bet that a piece of acacia wood 15 feet tall and 2 feet 3 inches square weighs way more than 150 pounds. That ain't going to hold 150 pounds. The 150 pound pedestals aren't going to hold that very well at all. So Josephus said that they were 4 fingers thick. That's about 3 inches. Now, some guys would be like 4 inches. But about 3 inches thick. So probably he was correct, and that's why it's not mentioned. It was inconsequential. 3 inches isn't too big of a deal. Now, each board wasn't laid this way. They were standing straight up and butted right up next to the other one, like a privacy fence. Now, obviously, this one here does have the really thick ones, but I'm still just wanting to use this as an illustration. This is a socket, a silver socket, which would go at the base. And they have 3 tenons. The tenons are these projections coming out at the bottom. Okay? And the text only says they have 2 tenons, so it would be more like that. That would be the base of it, and you would put those tenons down in the socket. So you'd have 2 sockets for each board. And each of these was made of solid silver, and it weighed 75 pounds each. It's a talent of silver, and they had 100 of these in all that were used. 100. So 7,500 pounds of silver was needed for the tabernacle. Like I said, this is a very expensive campground. Of course, they got that silver from Egypt. We learn in Exodus 11, verses 2 and 3. Okay, so you've got 20 on each side. That means that the whole length of it would be 45 feet, and the back would be 15 feet across. So it's really not that wide. How long is this room, approximately? 60 feet? So it's not as long as this room. Maybe from the back of the room to this front row of tables. Close to something like that, about 45 feet long and just 15 feet wide. Okay, that's 5 yards. Just a little bit longer than probably from Kim to Sherry here. Okay? And anybody, we could probably all fit inside there if we got close. Okay? Okay. Now, on the west side, literally it reads Yam. That is the sea. That is the seaside. That is the Mediterranean Sea. Because it was always to be set up that way. It doesn't say the west, it says the Yam. The side of the sea, which is the Mediterranean. So wherever the Israelites camped, they'd set it up the same way with the west side, the Holy of Holies, with the back of it toward the sea. For this wall, there were 6 boards of the same kind. And then on the corners, they had 2 really distinct boards that were about half the thickness, only probably 9 inches thick. And somehow they were to connect to the 2 walls. The corner is really important. Just ask Henry. Henry will tell you, any fence you make, the corner is the most important, right? Okay, now these corners are very important. So they're going to be extra stable and somehow connected to those 2 other walls permanently, at least the first board. So 3 boards will be connected permanently to one another, okay, to make that corner. So how are they connected? Well, it says they shall be double beneath. Now, this is confusing. But what it means is, the only thing I can think of was your dining room table. If it's one of those that has, you can add a leaf to it, and if you pull it apart, then on one side you've got projections coming out, don't you? And the other side's got little holes that they slide into, right? Okay, that's what it was. That's what we're talking about. Okay? On one side, on one of them, either the corner board or the adjacent board, that it have holes. And on the other board, it would have projections that stuck in those holes to hold them together. And then it says at the top, there shall be the first ring. So then they take this ring thing and they put it around all 3 boards. These 2 on the side and the corner board. And those stayed together permanently. Wherever they went, they just kept those 3 boards together and set them up as the corners. Okay? Well, we do things a lot the same today. No big mystery. So, is that a little bit clear? Okay? Try to explain the text here. Okay. The corner boards couldn't be those big honkers like every other one. They were only about 9 inches wide. They were smaller in width. So when you put the 3 together, you could carry it. Actually, they had oxen pulling these things, the big heavy things. And so this made the thing 15 feet wide, as we said. And each board, it says, was overlaid with gold. So they would hammer out gold into plates and then nail them to the acacia wood on the inside. Not on the outside, where everybody else could see, but on the inside, because this is Shekinah's house. You don't put gold walls on the outside of your house. You'd put them on the inside of your house. And so that's what they did. So the walls were basically gold and be solid around the sides. Also, it had bars in verses 26 to 30, the bars. And these bars are like the stretchers, I said, that added stability. The bars were made of acacia wood, and overlaid with gold again, and there were 5 bars for each side of the tabernacle, 3 sides, north, south, and west. The one in the middle was long, and it ran all the way the length. So this would be 45 feet on the north and 45 feet on the south. And I didn't put the true number of boards here. I just am trying to show you. So the long stretcher across here, and it wouldn't be black either. It'd be gold, but you wouldn't be able to see it then. There were 3 rows. And the one on top, it was 2. One in the middle that went all the way, and then 2 on the bottom, just like at the top.
On the inside.
Exactly. On the inside. And all this, of course, overlaid in gold. There were gold rings, of course, attached here, so you could slide these stretchers in there. Now here they don't have the middle one, but it looks like they placed it in the center of the boards, but they probably weren't that thick, so they were actually on the inside. So this is how they supported the whole thing. Finally, Moses said, "Then you shall erect the tabernacle according to its plan which you've been shown in the mountain." Which accounts for the details that, you know, were not recorded in verbal revelation for us. So this kind of gives an idea, though. You can see the sockets at the bottom, the stretchers across, solid walls of acacia wood overlaid with gold. Everything was gold on the inside. Now we can look at the veil in verses 31 and 32. The veil. You shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet material. Every time it says that, it's the same Hebrew words. Okay, same colors. Okay. And fine twisted linen. It shall be made with cherubim, the work of a skillful workman. Okay, so this is the inner veil. That's the one we're talking about. The one that separated the most holy place, where the ark was, from the holy place, where the altar of incense, the menorah, and the table of showbread were. This is the veil that separates those two rooms. You shall hang it on four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold. So these are pillars similar to these that also run where that separation would be. Their hooks also being of gold on four sockets of silver. So that means the four sockets are at the base, just like here. So they also sat in bases or sockets or pedestals for support. And so what we have here is something like a shower curtain. Okay, that's the only way I can describe it. I know that sounds kind of terrible, and I don't mean any disrespect by that. Just trying to give you an idea of what it is. They made a rod, and they hung it on hooks from that rod. Now, the veil in Hebrew is the word paraket, not parakeet, the paraket. And it would be made, as described here, to match the ceiling. Okay, and it had cherubim on it. It says, again, it would be the work of a skillful workman, which again means the work of a thinking artist, a creative artist. They would have to creatively figure out how to weave the cherubim and make pictures out of these dyed linens by twisting it together so it would match the ceiling. And then it was to be hung on four pillars of acacia wood. Now, these four pillars would be spaced across that 15 feet so that if you do all the math, it would be impossible for someone to just pick up the Ark of the Covenant and go out. You'd have to move one of those pillars. Okay? And an extra measure of protection is added at the very front of the entrance where they have five pillars. So they're even closer together. Okay? Is that what the picture shows?
Yeah.
Good. Okay? So that was to serve as a measure of protection for the ark. It couldn't just be stolen easily. Someone couldn't just go in there and get it and walk out. It would take some time to move one of those pillars out of the way and turn it in the right orientation where you could get it out. Now, the significance of the veil. Again, like I said last time we were here, many commentators like to spend a lot of time identifying every piece as significant of something. I'm a little hesitant to do this. J. Vernon McGee sees types in everything. Scofield also sees types in everything. The King James Version Bible Commentary also sees some types. K. Arthur has a study on tabernacle where it talks about all this. Everything signifies this. Well, I just don't feel comfortable doing that, okay? I only feel comfortable saying it's a type when in the New Testament I find that it calls it a type. But other interpreters, especially of older days, felt the freedom to identify everything. I just don't. And I'm responsible for doing this, so I'm not going to say the red signifies the blood of Christ, and this signifies His humanity, and this signifies His deity. I can't do all that. The Bible doesn't say that. Okay, so rather than giving my creative explanations, I'm just going to tell you what's there. There is one thing here that is said to be a type in the New Testament or related to something, and that's the veil. In the Old Testament, the veil denied access to God for everyone except the high priest on the Day of Atonement. You could not go into the most holy place. Only the high priest, only once a year. And when he entered it, it was with great trembling. Okay? I'm giving you all the necessary elements you need to know. One, it was inaccessible to anybody except the high priest. And two, on the day that they went shaking in their boots. Okay? In fact, if I recall right, they tied a rope around his leg. And because if he died, how are you going to get him out? I'm not going to get him. So they could drag him out if he died. But in the New Testament, everything has changed. Okay? And we just don't understand, because if we could live in both time periods, it'd be tremendous difference. We don't have to wait to go in once a year. We have access to God anytime we want. All the time. And two, we don't have to go in shaking. We can go in with confidence. Ephesians talks about this in chapter 2. We have access, and we can have confidence. Because the crucifixion of Christ's body typified the veil. The crucifixion of Christ's body was a veil that was torn. And when Christ died, that rent that veil from top to bottom, and believers now have free access to the most holy place where God is through Jesus Christ. So now we don't have to come shaking in our boots, but we can come in confidence because we are attached to Christ. We're accepted because He's accepted. Not because of our own merit, of course. We're accepted because of His merit. Okay. Now, verses 33 through 37, the final part of this section, we have where everything was supposed to be placed. First of all, he wants to talk about the veil. Did I put that up there? Okay. The veil was to be hung under the clasper hooks so that the gold-covered pillars, those four pillars inside, were not visible within the Holy of Holies. So the Holy of Holies just had three gold walls, and then you could see the veil. You couldn't see the pillars because they were out in the holy place just outside. So this, of course, was the best room. The Holy of Holies in the tabernacle was exactly 15 feet in length, 15 feet in width, and 15 feet in height. A perfect cube. The Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple was 30 feet in length, 30 feet in width, and 30 feet in height. A perfect cube. 1 Kings 6, verse 20. The New Jerusalem will be 1,500 miles in length, 1,500 miles in width, and 1,500 miles in height. A perfect cube. Revelation 21, 16. And the veil served as a separation in this tabernacle. Verse 34 mentions the Ark of the Covenant, and where it shall be placed. You shall put the mercy seat on the Ark of the Testimony in the Holy of Holies. It was the only piece that was to be placed in the Holy of Holies. And what is not being said here is, it shall go in after you put up the veil. It's not saying the order. We learn the order later. That it would, of course, have to go in before those four pillars were put up and the veil was there, because it wouldn't fit otherwise. The Ark of the Covenant, of course, was where atonement would take place once a year by the high priest to provide ritual cleanness for the whole nation so that Shekinah glory could remain in their presence and they could remain in Shekinah's presence without getting killed. In verse 35, we have the table of the showbread and the lampstand. You shall set the table outside the veil and the lampstand opposite the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south. And you shall put the table on the north side. So if you walked in the entrance, on your left would be the menorah, the golden lampstand. On your right would be the table of showbread. Directly in front of you would be the altar of incense. And behind that, the Ark of the Covenant on the other side of the veil. Verses 36 and 37 describe the screen. This is at the front, right at the very entrance. You shall make a screen for the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. Now this time it's the work of a weaver, not the work of a skilled craftsman or workman. You shall make five pillars of acacia for the screen and overlay them with gold, their hooks also being of gold, and you shall cast five sockets of bronze for them. Remember, the sockets are what goes down at the base. All the ones we've looked at so far were made of silver, but these are made of bronze. And the reason is because they're also a part of the courtyard. In the courtyard, everything is bronze. Okay? So finally we get to the screen. It's the masak. And it means curtain covering defenses. And I haven't studied out the exact significance of that, but it sounds significant. It's different from the word used of the veil in verse 31. This is a masak, and that was a parakeet. Now the difference is very clear in the Old Testament in the Hebrew, but it's not clear in the New Testament or in the Septuagint. The Septuagint translators, the Septuagint is a Greek translation of your Old Testament. Okay? The Septuagint translators translated both parakeet and masak with the same Greek word, katapetasma. And so every time in the New Testament Greek, when a veil is mentioned, it's difficult to tell which curtain is being referred to. Is it the one on the inside or is it the one at the entrance? You can't tell from the word. I'm just telling you that that's what makes it difficult in the New Testament. Are they talking about the entryway or are they talking about the inside veil? Which one are they talking about? Because the words are the same. Okay? But in the Old Testament, they were different. Whatever the case, the veil did serve as a screen, but the screen did not serve as the veil. Okay? And this is illustrated in Exodus 40, verse 21. The veil served as a screen. In other words, it was a screen, but the screen was not the veil. Okay? Exodus 40, verse 21 says, He brought the ark into the tabernacle and set up a veil for the screen, and screened off the Ark of the Testimony, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. So he's saying here, he set up a parakeet for the masak. So the veil served as a screen, but the screen at the entryway was not considered the veil. Okay, it was also made of this fine twisted linen of three colors, but guess what? There were no cherubim on it, and it was done by a weaver, not by a creative artist. So a different individual was used, a different kind of individual was used to make this. Lastly, it had five pillars of acacia wood overlaid with gold. But the bases of these, the sockets of these, were made, not made of silver, but these were made of bronze. Because these were a part of the courtyard, and everything in the courtyard is made of bronze. So what this means is that if you were standing at the entryway looking at the tabernacle, you would see five pillars. There wasn't a veil covering those pillars. It was behind those five pillars. They're covered with gold. So everybody could see those gold pillars there. And the screen was just behind it. So we start with gold in the innermost chambers, then silver around and at the edges at the base, and finally bronze for the courtyard. Everything was done to immaculate precision because of the holiness of God who would dwell in that place. So anyone inside the tabernacle who walked in and looked upward would see the cherubim on the ceiling, which symbolized the celestial throne of God. He would also see the gold clasps going across with a black background, in which there was an allusion to the heavens. As the Talmud said, the clasps appeared in the tabernacle like stars in the sky. So the overall impression of one who entered the tabernacle would be that he had entered into a world within the world, in a microcosm of the macrocosm, where God dwelled among His people. All right, so that's the tabernacle proper and its coverings.